Hi, I'm Reno.
And I'm Anders.
Welcome to How to Entrepreneur, a podcast program by Inch.
A show where we would like to take you on a fun journey about entrepreneurship. You'll hear inspiring stories with leaders and entrepreneurs across various industries and how they creatively overcome obstacles and challenges. Here we go.
Welcome to another episode of How to Entrepreneur. Today, we will discuss company operation. So imagine this, right? Your idea is no longer just an idea anymore. You have product market fit. You're able to fundraise and have successfully recruited talented people. You're ready. Now what? How do we actually run this machine effectively? Allow me to introduce you to our guest today. He is a CEO and co-founder of Kindly, a technology company that enhances customers' online experience and that enables businesses to be more successful. Welcome, Arash Saidi.
All right, thank you.
We are super excited to have you on, and thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And we know that there was a recent merger in 2020 between two companies that joined forces together and became Kindly. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about what Kindly offers to the public?
Yes, so we work with companies on the things that happen after a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
So companies spend quite a lot of money on marketing to attract visitors to their webpage. But what we saw was a lot of companies didn't spend money on optimizing what actually happened on their webpages. So they have really high bounce rates. And by optimizing your web pages and creating better user stories and better user experiences, you can get a lot more return on that marketing investment. So we provide technology that companies can use to have different type of actions happen on different events. So if someone is leaving the web page, or if someone has put something in their shopping cart and they're about to leave, our technology can ask that user if they want to save their shopping cart, if they have any feedback on something that might have been an outlier in the way they act. And we also build chatbots that can help users when they have questions regarding returns or a specific product. So we cover the whole customer journey after the marketing campaign.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. And I also wondering, like, the chatbots, how smart are the chatbots, and kind of how do you see them in the future as well?
So we work really on continuously optimizing and making the machine learning better. And the machine learning is one side of it, and the other aspect is the data that you use to train those models. And there are underlying models for kind of language representations that we have for each language. And then you have a data set for the specific problems that each of our customers have. And the more customers we get, the more language data we have access to, the more data we have access to connect it to specific problems. So we're targeting mostly, and we work mostly with e-commerce companies. So we're getting more and more data within that space. So the more data that we have, the better cooperation we can have with the companies that we work with, and the better chatbots we can build. And one side of it is building highly sophisticated chatbots that can answer questions. And then the other aspect is connecting the chatbots to services and things that you have to connect the bot to in order to actually provide a personalized and good experience for the end user.
Yeah,
and that was what Kindly was all about until 2020, when we merged Kindly with Recheckit. Recheckit was working on optimizing web pages and creating unique user experiences for shoppers. So connecting those two things has made us made it possible for us to deliver something that is very unique, which is a proactive user experience, a proactive chatbot that not only is there when you have an issue, but can also guide you through your shopping with proactive messages, helping you find the right product, saving shopping carts, sending you an email with your saved shopping cart, sending you reminders on different channels like SMS, Messenger, etc.
I have a dying question because I know there are tools out there, Arash, that tells you how long people are staying on your page, perhaps where they're looking at, but the why do they bounce? Why do they get off the website? A lot of the times they don't have that information. Maybe you have the AR aspect of it, the machine learning, but how do you help businesses find out the reason why they bounce? And therefore, here's a solution for that.
So the way to do that is very simple. You ask the user, you ask the end user. And I think a lot of companies like Hotjar and Google Analytics, they try to track users and try to build analytics based on user behavior. And you can find a lot of issues doing that. But when you ask users, you get a lot more interesting data. And that's what we're doing. We're not asking every user all the questions, but we're trying to find anomalies. And then we ask the user based on those type of edge cases, what went wrong, what made them not make a purchase, or what made them put something in their shopping cart and take it out, et cetera. So this is quite a new product that we're working on, and we have pilots with a few companies that we're testing. And this is something that we think will provide quite a lot of information for the companies that we work with on how they can optimize and create better user experiences on their web pages and on their apps.
Kind of sound like a stupid question, but that's actually very straightforward, right? You ask them. So my question is, we have had the pleasure and opportunity, Arash, to speak with a few different CEOs. One little trend that I personally see is when they were in a university, they were studying whether it's mechanical engineering, a different type of fields. And in there, they were able to see, here's a technology. They learned that. And then they kind of pair it with another solution or whatnot, and then design their own strategy so they can offer it to other companies. So I know you come from a machine learning background, a natural language processing background. How did you take that, what you've learned, and how did you find out, how did you create Kindly with what you already know? How did that come about?
So in 2016, Mark Zuckerberg went on stage on F8, or what's called the conference that Facebook has, announced that they would open up Facebook Messenger for conversational AI, for chatbots. And they foresaw a future where you would communicate with companies the same way that you did with your friends. That sparked the kind of interest to pursue and use natural language processing in kind of communication between companies and the end user. But that wasn't where we started. We wanted to actually create one chatbot like Google Home or Amazon Echo, but for the Scandinavian market. And we wanted to connect this to different services and products and companies so that you could ask this bot whether or not you could get a movie ticket for this movie tonight or order a pizza or make a reservation, etc. So that was kind of where we started. But talking to a lot of companies and trying to get them on board, because we had to integrate with all these third part, all these companies to get all the services in this chatbot, we saw that most of these companies weren't really interested in that, but they were interested in whether or not we could help them automate their customer support, or if we could help them put their services on Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp or other channels. So when we kind of saw that, we pivoted to making a platform where companies could create their own bots. And at that time, not a lot of companies were doing that. So we were one of the kind of first companies, at least in Scandinavia, that were using very sophisticated machine learning to automate customer support. And not very long after we started the company, we landed our first partner and started kind of working on providing them with this platform that in the beginning was just this a mess of notebook where you created the data sets and we just read it in using a very primitive kind of backend solution that we created that would train these machine learning models. But now we have a very sophisticated platform with great user experience that is very easy to use and companies can very easily create very sophisticated bots and services.
And hearing your story, Arash, about in the early beginning where you were testing your solution, pivoting really quickly. Now through the merger, I noticed that you have close to like 70 plus employees. But I would love to hear a little bit more about the early stories when you guys were ready to start, right? So I'm trying to put ourselves in the position of our listeners, young entrepreneurs, found a product market fit, maybe they got the funding, so have a team. Okay. Do you have any stories of early, like what did you do? Because it seems like there's so many options, right? Like how did you start? Any like lessons you could share with us? Any story that yeah, it comes up?
So in the beginning, there's a whole different type of energy in a company and everybody's kind of doing everything. So as a founder, I was certain times you're coding a little bit, other times you're in sales meetings. And I remember like the early days, we were, this was also before the pandemic where you had physical meetings. And there were times you had to, we had booked so many meetings that it was kind of hard to going from one meeting to another meeting. And a few times where you couldn't get a cab, but we had to run and you're coming into a meeting, you're kind of drenched in sweat. You just have to dry yourself up as good as you can before you go into another sales meeting or pitch meeting or whatever. So it's very hectic, but it's a lot of fun. And you know everybody, you're very close to everybody in the company. And there's definitely a lot of fun in that, but it can be tough as well because you're very... being that close to people and working long hours and you're really dependent on everybody working really hard and delivering on what they promise. There's also a certain level of tension in that that can be difficult at times as well. So when you're growing, you lose that connection. There's less tension, but you also lose that kind of tight connection. And you're, as a founder and CEO, you're kind of forced to remove yourself from the day-to-day operations. Think more about management and building a management team and HR and finding ways to connect all these departments together and figure out how people can work best together. And you're much more focused on processes and people rather than solutions and coding and the nitty-gritty details of all the things that you're doing. So things tend to become more complicated. Things tend to take more time. There's definitely a lot of frustration in that as well because the people that start in your company that are new, they have a lot of energy, much in the same way that you had in the early days and want to do things really quick. But unfortunately, as you grow, there's also a need for processes and you have to do things in a certain way. So, but you always have to find a balance between that. And I think that's the most tricky part when you reach a point where you're 50, 60, 70 people is finding the balance between having processes in place, but also giving freedom and autonomy to the employees to experiment and do things on their own and figuring out things on their own.
Yeah, I think it's super inspiring to hearing that story kind of growing from the hardworking, I don't know, two, three, four guys maybe to creating a big team over 70 people. And I was wondering, how do you kind of find those people that are willing to push the thing with you? And how do you have any hiring strategy in the beginnings that was special?
So in the beginning, hiring was mostly done by me and my co-founder.
Yeah.
and you're spending a lot of time trying to find people that are willing to kind of join a startup that is filled with risk. You don't know if it's going to succeed or not. You don't know if you're going to be unemployed in a few months when the company potentially goes bankrupt. But we were fortunate enough to meet a lot of interesting people. We had our offices at Startup Lab. So the people at Startup Lab were also really helpful and helping us meet people, network, etc. But also, I remember a lot of the early days. I was sitting on LinkedIn late at evenings and into the night, just sending messages to random people that I thought that had an interesting profile. And a few of our hires came that way. A lot of our hires came through the people that we hired in the early days. So they knew another person that we interviewed and hired. And then when you grow, you start to kind of get more recruiters involved. And now we have an HR department that Kevin, our COO, leads. And he's very much responsible for the hiring and recruiting at our company now. So you have to have a very different strategy when you grow. But I think even now, there are times when as a founder and CEO, you have to sit down and try to actually send out a few messages here and there and see if you can find potential candidates through the old school way.
To company operation, and we have an expert with us today, Arash Saidi, and most of us young colleague graduates have only one single point of view working in a company on a particular team maybe, and but from a CEO's perspective you have a bird's eye view, seeing, you know, every aspect of the works, and you can see all the people. And so can you share to our listeners what is company operation and why is it so important for a company?
What is it? You know, such a simple phrase, but I don't really know what it means.
Yeah, what does company operations mean? I guess it's the way a company is run, and that's going to be different from company to company. And in the early days, I was really obsessed about reading about how different companies were run, like reading about Google, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. But as we've grown, I've kind of stopped reading that much about company operations and trying to figure out what's the best way to run the company for us, for Kindly. Yeah. And obviously, I do read, but I try to take everything with a grain of salt and try to figure out what changes do we need to make in order to become better. One of the things that we implemented recently was a tool that we use to gather information from all the employees. So we do surveys every second week, every 2 weeks. And this is something that's relatively new. So we haven't really been able to use it effectively yet. But I think it's very important once you reach a point where you've crossed the threshold where as a CEO, you can talk to everybody on a daily or weekly basis to gather information more formally. So through surveys or through a software that gathers that information and try to figure out where the holes are. So I think that's kind of, I would summarize company operations as the way companies run and then figuring out where your weak points are and trying to put in resources and put in people there. And what I think the biggest lesson for me has been as a CEO, I'm not here to find the solutions. So that was a really transition for me from going to being really close to the product, going into the product, logging in, thinking about it on a daily basis, looking at competitors, talking to the product manager about, you know, why aren't we doing this? We should do this. What about this? Why don't we have that on the roadmap, etc. To trying to move a little bit away from that and make people responsible for certain aspects of the product, of sales, of running the company, essentially.
I'd love to kind of pinpoint on a thing you just said, Arash, about as a CEO, I am not the one expected to find the solution. I think as a young entrepreneur, if I were to join a company, you know, at a startup analyst, startup position, I look up to the leader, I would expect them to come up with a solution, right? I don't know if our listeners are having these questions. Could you drill a little bit deeper? What do you mean by that? Do you mean by I'm the one supposed to distribute the work, trust the people, or tell us a little about what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how I think about it. Is you as a CEO, you set the vision, and you set the goals and targets that you want the company to reach, and then you distribute the tasks. Or the responsibilities to the management team and the rest of the company. And then you have weekly or bi-weekly one-on-ones or sit-ins with different members of the team to figure out, are we on right track or not? And what do we need to do in order to reach our targets?
Got it.
And for me, that was a little bit difficult in the beginning, because you're so used to making the decisions. You're so used to calling the shots and being part of most of the operations that taking that step back and trusting people and trying to figure out. So one of the things is also trying to figure out who is the right person for that specific role. And that's very difficult, because there's no real test or way to do that. You just have to kind of trust your instinct. And you're going to make mistakes. So that's also part of the learning curve, that you're bound to make mistakes, but you have to own the mistakes, try to learn from them and make changes so that the operations become better. And on that road, you're going to make mistakes. People are going to be unhappy. One person will think that they should have gotten that position. So there's a lot of politics involved as well. There's a lot of things that involve people, and you're bound to make mistakes. And the most important thing, I think, is to own those mistakes and try to learn from them.
That survey tool you guys are using, were there some of the data or information you get back because of that tool you have that you didn't even think of? And then you go, oh, that's really important. I got to fix this, or there's a way I got to find a solution for it. Were there any data insights you got from that? I'm curious.
Definitely. So one of the things that we found we're not very good at in Kindly is providing people with the opportunities to learn. So I think you can have a tendency to just focus really on the targets and the KPIs and the things that you have to do in order to succeed, that you also forget that there has to be a set aside time and energy and effort into evolving and learning and giving people the time and freedom to also learn from the things that they're doing on a daily basis. So that was one of the things that wasn't very clear to me before, because as a CEO, you get a little bit removed from the operations, you get a little bit removed from people, and people tend to not report a lot of the negative and bad aspects of operations directly to you. Mm-hmm. So definitely there were surprises. There were things that I wasn't really aware of. Yeah. So that tool has been very helpful so far. Mm-hmm. And I think we are going to rely more and more on that as we grow.
Yeah. And I'm curious about, because we're talking about company operation and scaling, something you mentioned, Arash, about at the early stages, you had to wear different hats, jump into different meetings. You had your hand, your fingers on different teams. But as you continue to grow, you become a little bit further away, right? Understandably so, most companies go through this. I'm curious because this reminds me of a conversation I heard on YouTube of blitz calling by Brian Chesky, the Airbnb founder and CEO. He was telling the story about as the continue go from the operation of 10 people is very different from 50 to 100 to 1,000, let alone the communication strategy. But speaking of company operation, were there any point, maybe it's from 20 to 30, maybe it's after the merger, that you go, huh, the strategy has to change a little bit the way that I was running this company before? What was that breaking point? And what's some of the things that you had to change?
So the merger was the biggest change in the company composition that we've ever had. So in 2018, I think we hired and onboarded 10 people at the same time. That was before the merger. And that was really fun. Brought a lot of energy to the company. It was very exciting to get all of these new people on board with new ideas, lots of energy. And that really pushed the company in a whole new direction. The merger did the same thing. But the merger was difficult in the sense that there were two cultures that had to be combined. There were two visions, there were two product portfolios, two completely different technical architectures and code processes, et cetera, that had to be merged. And all of a sudden you went from each company being around 20, 30 people to a combined company that was close over 50 people.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I had to change was let's go from being more involved to focusing more on strategy. So I think when you're starting a company, some founders do really focus on strategy and have long-term plans already from day one. We didn't have that. And I don't think that it is very necessary to have that when you're starting out, because you're going to make so many changes that it's so difficult to predict even a few months ahead. You're constantly iterating your product, your direction with every new customer. But once you reach a stage where you have 150 customers, you have 50 employees, then I think you have to change your focus on from like day to day, week to week, customer to from customer to customer, to a more long-term vision and strategy for the company, and try to get people on board and try to get them to believe in that long-term vision. That was definitely a change and a little bit tricky for me in the beginning. So, and you know, you're in the middle of a pandemic. Communication is very difficult and different now as well. We used to be able to gather everybody in a room, and when you present something and you have everybody in the same room, it's easier to get a discussion, it's easier to get feedback, and you can also see the reactions of people that you're presenting to. But now, you know, you're presenting to Google Hangouts, and you're using Google Hangouts, and you're presenting to a kind of a quiet audience.
Yeah.
That has been challenging and tricky, but when you're working with people that you trust, and when you feel that they trust you, then those things are just an opportunity. You know, just trying to look at all of those things as ways of improving and figuring out how can we constantly do better. And there's definitely a lot of things that I would have done differently had I had access to the information that I have now at the beginning of the merger.
Right.
So we did a lot of things wrong. But as I said earlier, you just have to accept that you're going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of studies that show that what really differentiates great CEOs from good CEOs from mediocre CEOs are the pace at which you make decisions. Mm-hmm. So if you take too long making decisions, and if you dwell on things, and if you just push things further and further out because you have to have perfect amount of information before you call a shot, then you're going to have less opportunities to learn. And you know, the more mistakes you make, I think it was Niels Bohr or something, a physicist who said that an expert is someone that has made all the mistakes that is possible within a very narrow field.
So I'd love to quickly touch on the operation you guys are running over at Kindly. I noticed, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you guys are running a very lean ship, meaning financially, it sounds like you guys only raised one round of funding in 2008. Is that right?
So we raised two rounds of capital. I don't have the dates in my head. And also Recheckit raised capital. So the combined companies have raised several rounds. But I would say that all of those rounds were kind of seed rounds with a few investors. So we haven't really raised large amounts of capital.
Great. So thank you for clarifying that. So those two seed rounds, and obviously with Recheckit before the merger, may I ask you, is that something you guys have in mind? Like, what are some of the strategies you guys have in place at Kindly that's that again is more leaning towards the lean startup idea? Because, you know, back in the Silicon Valley, it's all about startups trying to inflate valuation, getting money, getting to IPO as quickly as they can to cash out. It sounds like you guys are not doing that. May I ask you, what are some strategies you guys are having to run a lean ship?
For me, it's really important that the operations and the salaries can be paid out by our customers. So we don't want to rely on capital to run the company, but we're constantly evaluating different strategies and we're evaluating new product ideas and opening offices. So we recently opened an office in Stockholm, Sweden. So we're always looking at options to grow and always looking at options as new directions we can develop in to help our customers in new and better ways. And some of those things may need an initial investment. And in that's the point where we want to raise capital, is if we have some specific strategy, some specific product development, or a specific sales strategy that we want to pursue, where we have a plan for a return on that initial investment.
Yeah.
But we don't want the company to be dependent on valuations and raising capital and having that kind of Silicon Valley mindset, because there's always a risk that you're not delivering on the promises or the goals or targets that you set out when you raise capital. And when you don't reach those targets, that can get very ugly.
Yeah.
So we don't want to be dependent on capital, but we're constantly evaluating our strategy and seeing if there's a need for capital to pursue the direction that we want to pursue.
If you're an inspired young entrepreneur, one of the best ways to start is to join a team and learn from the talented leaders. So as Kindly continues to grow, they're actually hiring rapidly across many different roles. So check out the openings with the link below in the description to find out. I believe they have 6 openings right now. Thank you so much, Rosh.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We will see you at the next episode about sales and marketing, where we will talk to the CEO and designer at Unbranded, Ingrid Emma Jakobsen. If you like How to Entrepreneur, follow us at Inch.io on Instagram and Facebook. Or if you live in Bergen, follow us at Inch Bergen. See you next time.